Welcome back to A People's Guide to Publishing, episode 57. I am your host, Joe Biel, the autistic publisher, founder and CEO of Microcosm, and author of A People's Guide to Publishing, the book.
I'm Ellie Blue. I'm the marketing and editorial director at Microcosm, and I just learned that phonics really works. Whole word reading is a bunch of bunk. I mean, everybody knew that, but now we all know for sure because of brain science.
This week, we are going to answer another reader question, which is, I've read the book, I founded my company, how do I acquire my first manuscript?
First of all, congratulations!
It's pretty awesome.
Hey, high fives!
Not That's everybody great. Gets that far.
You're a publisher.
Mm-hmm. Now you just gotta become a publisher. I do feel like it's noble that the author is not just founding the publishing company to publish their own work. Because I feel like that speaks better to their ability to keep a significant and substantial emotional distance between their decisions and the work. So what a lot of people do is they contact authors that they are a fan of, and they ask them what they have in the cooker or uncommitted or, you know, maybe that are like somewhat adjacent or outside of their genre. So if somebody only writes crime fiction, but they have a cool poetry book that they can't get their agent to sell, they would probably be willing to let you publish that without, you know, their usual advance, without any advance, because they just want to have that work published because it's of personal significance to them. And, you know, I could tell you hundreds of stories over the years where we approached an author and the author said, you know, I'm not interested in writing that book, but I would love to publish a book of my collages. And, you know, it's a considerably famous person. We couldn't publish the book of collages, but maybe you could. And you'd kind of be surprised how much even relatively mid-list to famous authors aren't able to publish and how willing they are to work with you.
Though they might not be easy to work with, you still need to keep your eye out for the same red flags, even if the author is famous and you're such a fan that you can't breathe.
Yeah. And then the other thing that a lot of people do, I mean, and this is certainly the way that I approached it when I was starting Microcosm a long time ago, is that, you know, there were people that were on my radar that were great writers and were not being published. Urban Hermit, still around, kind of had been publishing zines for many years. I was pretty stoked on said zines. I offered the book deal. We published the book. That seemed, you know, the author was not famous, but the author was very competent and qualified. And, you know, so, and similarly, Alberian was somebody else in my sphere at that time. And, you know, who we published a new book by him in the past year, you know, 24 years later, you know. So those kinds of things are often a good starting point. A lot of people publish their most talented friends, which can be a little bit up and down because it has the same problem as you don't have enough emotional distance to make good decisions as a publisher. When it's somebody, you know, it's like it's kind of like publishing your mom or something, where you like think this is the most special, talented person that's ever lived, and so you kind of can't see the flaws.
And like whatever friend dynamic you have with them, like if it's hard for you to give them critical feedback, then it's going to be really hard to get a good book.
Yeah. Every author in the world likes to believe that, you know, there's people like scouring Wattpad or Kindle or whatever, seeking out their newest, latest, greatest author finds. And no actual, like, publisher has time to do that, but you have time to do that.
Or if you're in the fanfic community, you probably know a lot of great writers who would rather work with a publisher that, like, understands their community.
Yeah.
Or, and, like, any community, really.
And the trouble is that once an author is so deep into the self-publishing community, they become skeptical of publishers, and they have a hard time understanding that every publisher is not a scam, because those are the only stories that are told there, or they're hearing those stories fourthhand from somebody who has a friend who has a friend who heard a story about how a publisher didn't treat them correctly. In those worlds, you need to be a little bit more convincing, but this is also why like an actual relationship goes further, as does somebody who has an actual experience or background in the publishing industry, because they aren't deluded about the value of their work, you know?
What about, like, putting out a public call for submissions?
Never hurts either. So the most important thing in a public call for submissions is you say what you do want and you say what you don't want. You say who you want and you say who you don't want.
And you'll still get things you don't want from people you don't want.
Yeah.
But you can also just ignore those things.
Yeah. Like the amount of Christian memoirs and weird poetry about being a doctor that we get is, you know, easy to ignore. And it's very entertaining. But more importantly, you know, that's the job, is you wade through all that stuff to get to the appropriate stuff.
And then, like, the way to get the word out about that is kind of similar to how you would get the word out about your books. Like, you kind of want to be looking for authors amongst the people who will also be your readers.
Yeah.
And developing that community now will help you in the long run, because then you will get, you'll build relationships, you'll build your brand. It's a win-win-win. People will know who you are. They'll be waiting for to see what you do. Maybe they'll be waiting to see what your first three books are before they submit their own. Maybe they'll subscribe to your newsletter. Maybe they'll subscribe to your Kickstarter project.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of publishers use a service called Submittable, which we don't use because I was horrified to discover it has a fee, because I'm also like, wait, so you pay money to get more submissions? This seems completely backwards. I would pay money to get fewer submissions, better submissions. But, you know, for a lot of publishers, that makes sense. They want to have the, you know, a lot of them have explained it to me that that makes them look more credible and professional, mm-hmm. which when you're starting out is important. So evaluate that based on your budget.
And also, like, think about, like, what your submission criteria will be. Like, a lot of people have really fussy submission criteria, and I think sometimes that's needless. Like, if you're taking digital submissions, it kind of doesn't matter, like, what is the font, and what is the spacing, and what is the margin. And, like, but if you want, like, for instance, like, think about what is necessary and helpful to you in the process. Like, do you want just a pitch, or do you want the whole manuscript, or do you want a book proposal? Like,
those are your options.
Yeah. And honestly, getting just the pitch is what we do, because it makes it way faster to wade through. But if you're looking at fiction, you probably want to be able to read more of what the person has written.
Yeah.
Or poetry, for instance.
And you need to think of how much of a sample you need to make an evaluation.
Exactly, yeah. And then, like, in terms of criteria, like file types, if there's a file type you know is going to frustrate you and you won't be able to read, you can be like, anything but this. Otherwise, you don't really need to, like... Yeah, like, you don't really need to micromanage how people submit. Giving a deadline can be good, or if you're like, this is always open, that's also good.
And a lot of, like, the bigger publishers don't want digital submissions because it puts them at risk for viruses and the like, because attachments are rife with infected files. But that's because, just due to the sheer volume, that's why they want it printed out on pieces of paper and mailed to them, because there's no way you can get, well, now there's an entirely different kind of virus you can get from that, but I digress. But for a smaller publisher, yes, you don't want to be finicky. You want to just essentially see if the work is good, if the person seems good to work with, and, you know, if it's the kind of thing that you could conceivably get excited about and actually sell.
Yeah. And also, like, decide what are your deal breakers and not. Like, if you're like, hey, please only send this kind of file, and the person sends another kind of file, that may or may not be a deal breaker for you. But it probably is a deal breaker if you are like, hey, only lesbian erotica, and somebody sends man erotica.
Right.
Then, like, you are going to be wasting your time to go back and be like, hey, please rewrite this with lesbians. Like, so, you know, there's definitely, like, make your decisions up front about your screening. It'll make it go much easier.
This has been People's Guide to Publishing, the podcast. I am your host, Joe Beal, author of A People's Guide to Publishing.
I'm Ellie Blue, and I have so much more to say about this topic, but we'll get back to it another time.
Another week.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us once again.
Please send your questions to podcast@microcosmpublishing.com so we can answer them on future episodes.
And please give us 5 stars on iTunes and everywhere else that podcasts are reviewed.
You can find us on the internet at microcosm.pub.
On Twitter at microcosm.
On Facebook at microcosmpublishing.
On Instagram at microcosm_pub.
And here in Portland, Oregon on North Williams Avenue.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful week.